There's that four, that eight.
Aṅgahitvā-chananayo
jāta-mātram sasūsitām apotayat-chilā-priste svāt-on-mūlita-saurida tam, the child. Kahitva, taken by force. Chadanayo, by the two legs. Jata matram, the newborn child. Swasu, of his sister. Dutam, the daughter. Apojaya, smashed. Shala Priste,
on
the surface of a stone.
Sa'arta
Ummulita, uprooted because of intense selfishness. Saurida, all friendship or family relationships. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense selfishness, Kamsa, who is sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. Text 9. The child, Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. Purport. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone. But since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu, or Krishna, took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yashoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? Om Gyana Tirmanandasya Gyana Jada Shabakaya Chakshanamaitam Yana Tazmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vishwami Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vashtachare Shatarine. This is quite an intense, dramatic situation, and you're getting a very detailed account of the scene. Kamsa is sitting on his knees. He's just raced from his bed into the prison cell where Devaki is, because he's been alerted by his watchman that she's finally given birth. Kamsa, he wasn't sleeping. He was in anxiety, waiting for this eighth child who was supposed to kill him. So as soon as he heard that the child had been born, he races into Devaki's room, her prison cell, and sitting on his knees, he grasps the newborn child, brand new baby, by the legs and tries to smash her head against a stone. So, that's what you were wondering. What could overcome a person to such an extent that he or she could do such a thing? And the Bhagavatam gives the answer. Sa'arta Ummulita. All the friendship or family relationships are evaluated by Kamsa in terms of his intense selfishness. And because there was danger from this child, that selfishness based on his fear, or the fear based on his selfishness, uprooted any kind of family relationship. So what about this intense selfishness? We cannot pretend that we don't know what it is. Just because we haven't smashed any little babies against the stone, we cannot think that we don't know what intense selfishness is. Intense selfishness is based on thinking, I am the body. And I have to do what's necessary to make my body feel good and to keep my body from pain. And then it gets more subtle, as we all know. Besides gross physical pain and pleasure, I also have some subtle concerns of appreciation and prestige for my body, for my bodily existence. People should appreciate me. They should understand that I am a worthy person. They should relish my unique qualities and traits. And in this way, there'll be peace in the world. But as long as they don't notice my unique attributes and the great contributions I'm capable of making, then there'll be great havoc. So in this way, everybody is acting selfishly for physical pleasure and trying to avoid physical pain, and also for subtle distinction and adoration for their material existence. These motivations are very powerful because we are identifying with the body and mind. Why is it we consider the body and mind so valuable? Not only the body and mind, but also things that are in relation to the body and mind. We consider them valuable, actually, because the soul is in the body. This is what Krishna conscious practitioners know. We appreciate the body because the soul is there. Even an ordinary materialist, as we all know, when the soul is gone, they don't care for the body. What do? They burn it, or they stick it under the ground. No one is lusting after dead bodies. No, it could be your most dearly beloved husband or wife. But when he's dead, after the funeral, at least in Western society, or even before the funeral, you're looking for another partner. That's normal because, you must have some facility for sense gratification. So, especially in the Western countries, if your romantic partner is very physically ill, then it's considered understandable that you need to establish another relationship even before the death of your partner, because it's natural. I know in Indian society, of course, these things are looked down upon. Although, in India, they are getting so much television coming from the West with complete degradation available for every family member to watch. So, these things, this degradation is everywhere. I know in the case, I have one relative, she had muscular dystrophy, something like that. She was my aunt. Must have been in her late 50s, early 60s. So her husband was a doctor. And so, because she had muscular dystrophy, she was not able to pacify his passions. So, naturally, her husband went and he had another relationship. This is going on in the end of 50s, early 60s years of age. But what can you do? The propaganda of the age is telling you that you should go on enjoying sense gratification as much as possible, find the right doctor to help you, and then you'll be very happy. There was one survey done by a university in Melbourne, Australia, La Trobe University. And there they found out that the old people between the ages of 60 and 75 were still very active in the mode of passion. And this way, people think this is great advancement. Due to having good doctors and good psychological counselors, we can still chew the chewed even at an advanced age when the bodies are so shriveled and weak and frail. But what else do people have to live for? So therefore, the husband of my aunt, he was thinking, I'm 60 years old and she's got muscular dystrophy. I must do something to achieve the ultimate goal in life. So, otherwise, every day is passing. I'm an old man. I will die soon, and what's the use in dying without trying to enjoy as much as you can, even when you're in your early 60s? Of course, we're reading in the Lilamrita, Prabhupada. He was more or less a vanaprastha, unofficial vanaprastha. And Satsirdas Goswami is explaining the Vedic system of brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. People today have no idea about that kind of system. Actually, that kind of system is not simply just some nice add-on that should be there in human society. The ashrama system means civilization. Without it, you do not have civilization. Three of the four ashramas deny sex. Only in the grihastha ashram is there limited facility for sex life. So just the arrangement of the ashrama system itself lets you know what the purpose of the human form of life is. To decrease lusty involvement. Now, the so-called civilization we have today is dedicated to just the opposite. They think the more lust, the better. And therefore, people are always concerned about their lusty activities. How will it be better? How does it compare to the past? How can it be in the future? This is their main anxiety, because the so-called civilization of today is telling them, this is the thing. This is the essence of life. Such people have a hard time understanding the Vedic ashrama system, in which the main thing in life, the only nectar in life in them, is being denied. So what you have today is not civilization. You have animal life. Animals playing with lots of gadgets and technology, going to universities and pretending that they're very learned. But you actually have animals, because real human life means to control the sex desire. In the animal life, they do not control. Although actually they're controlled completely by material nature. So many animals, you will find that they only engage in reproduction at certain times of the year, according to the modes of material nature. Human beings, they think that the purpose of human intelligence is to construct a situation in which they're always having sex life. So in this way, they have a very difficult time appreciating Krishna consciousness. They think it's a great terror, because it's taking away what they think is the cause of all causes and the supreme destination. So the husband of my aunt, he was obviously thinking like that. So he went out and he got a paramour to keep providing him the nectar at the age of 60 years old. So somehow or other, his wife found out. Now, he was a doctor, and she had muscular dystrophy, in which all the muscles of the body deteriorate. She was bedridden. She couldn't even move practically. Yet she got so angry when she found out, even though he was a doctor and he was out taking care of her, that she, I want a divorce. So all it caused a big scene in one half of the family. My family, all the relatives were going to her. Just try to understand, be sympathetic towards him. You're no longer able, so therefore, he's a man. He has to, try to understand these things. And he's also, be a little smart. He's a doctor. He's taking care of you. So you just allow these things and don't be so angry. This is normal. What do you expect he's going to do, Be practical. But no, she was so angry. No, I want a divorce. So she divorced him. So I was very shocked at how, not shocked, but amused how logically and rationally and eloquently all these very educated people were discussing this. Yes, it is natural. What can she expect of him? She's bedridden. Muscles are all destroyed. He's a grown man, 60 years old. He must engage in the supreme activity. Otherwise, she'd be very cruel to restrain him. What does she expect him to do? That's great, very cruel. So they were not sympathetic with her. They were sympathetic with him. Yes, he's doing the right thing. He must achieve the supreme destination. He must act for the highest thing. How does she stop him? So this is what people call civilization today. These were all, they're very educated, big positions in city governments, but yet they're discussing like this with very great eloquence and, very logical language, professionalism. But what is the conclusion? Simply how to become lower than animals. So that is what happens when selfishness is made legitimate. Selfishness based on the body. That, look, I have to gratify my body. What can be done? You cannot fault me for that. And this is leading to the complete breakdown of whatever little civilization there is in the West. This intense selfishness based on the body. Marriage, people don't even understand what the need of marriage is anymore. There's no point. What's the point to it? People come together and they try to squeeze out some happiness. And once you're no longer satisfied by a particular person, you go away. And everyone says, yes, we can understand that. It's natural. And you have your right in this life to get pleasure. And if the person no longer is giving you pleasure, then it's it's perfectly understandable that she will go away. And never mind, you have children. The children, they should understand this. In fact, you should teach the children the same principle. That is considered normal. Don't feel they're counseling the adults. Don't feel inhibited by your children. If you feel you need a divorce, if you feel you need another partner, you go get another partner. Why? Because that's the purpose of life. Everyone in his own way, her own way, has to get happiness. And you shouldn't feel bad because you have children and the family's breaking up. The children, they should be taught the same principle. They should also do whatever is necessary for their own happiness. And there'll be advancement in society when everybody simply gets down to this one principle. Act for your own sense of gratification. This is how Maya is deluding everybody. The reason why there's no peace in the world is because people are prevented from acting for their sense of gratification. But the more people are allowed to act to please their body, free from the church, free from social restraints, free from any religious restraint, then there'll be a natural unfolding of peace. People are talking like this. They're thinking in that way. And in this way, whatever little bit of civilization they have in the West is being completely destroyed. There's no reason why you should have any allegiance to anything other than your own sense gratification. And as long as people are thinking like that, how can there be civilization? No one will sacrifice for any higher cause. Therefore, everybody will act like Kamsa. What is it? The child is born and is supposed to kill me? I'll smash her head against the wall. Nowadays, they don't even wait for the child to be born. They'll go after the child in the womb and try to kill it. So there's nothing so strange about what Kamsa is doing. According to the modern standard, he's being very merciful. At least he waited till the child was born. So this is how low the current situation is. And it's something we always have to understand. Otherwise, we're going to become blinded by all the so-called opulence and technological conveniences and gadgets of the current society. Government functions seem to be going on nicely. The banking system is getting more and more computerized. Just like here in New Zealand, they're having this more and more, they're urging people to use computerized banking systems, money, computerized money. So people are feeling things are orderly, things are all right. But actually, you just have a bunch of animals playing around with all these gadgets and toys. And there's no way society can go on in this way. We have to be fools to think like that. Prabhupada always writes in his purports that whenever the world becomes full of unqualified animalistic persons, then Krishna always arranges that some natural disturbance comes. And either in the form of war or disease or catastrophe, in order to cleanse the earth. So we should not be lulled to sleep and think it's always going to go on like this. It's never happened, never will happen. It is not that Krishna has left this world, has created the world and left it for demoniac persons to destroy. In the Gita, Krishna says, Utsi Deya Ime Loka Nakuryam Parma Chedaham Sankarasya Takacha Syam. If I don't enter into the affairs of this world, all the planets will be ruined. Krishna explains in the third chapter of the Gita, I have nothing to do. I have no need to gain anything. But still I'm engaged in work, Arjuna. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that because Krishna is the creator and the father, indirectly Krishna could be blamed by the problems of the world. Therefore, Krishna comes, yadayadaya dharmasya, glanya bhavati bharata. He comes to show what the real standard is and to attract the living entity's attention towards his pastimes. So we cannot say that God has created the world and then abandoned it. No, that is not so. Bhagavad Gita explains that Krishna says, I will come. I will do something about it. Otherwise, what will happen to all the three worlds? Arjuna, I have no need of anything. I'm self-sufficient. Yet still, I'm engaged in work. In one sense, you can call it work, yes. But it's not work as normally understood because Krishna has nothing to personally gain. Yet, out of compassion, Krishna comes to this world. So Krishna is explaining this to Arjuna. so that Arjuna understands that just like Krishna has his mission, Arjuna also has his mission, and Arjuna should fight in that mission for the sake of other living entities. So, this intense selfishness of Kamsa, this is being actively developed and enculturated by the present society. They're training every child to have this intense selfishness of Kamsa. Think of your bodily needs and do the necessary. Whether you are a young child, if you are a young child of 10 or 11 years old, why should you wait to engage in lusty affairs? Why should you wait? Just turn on the TV, you'll see everything on television. Why should you wait? If you're 65 years old, vanaprastha, forget it. You can still try to enjoy lust at 65. Why deny all these things? The more that these things happen, the more happy and fulfilled people will be. This is the deep flood of Maya that has covered the land. And people are going around and they're talking about spiritual or scientific or this or political. And what actually are they doing? What actually are they doing? If you understand what they're doing, then you'd be horrified. Of course, Prabhupada was very strong, not only in explaining these things in the West, but also in India. There was once he was at the mansion of a rich man in India, and they had invited Prabhupada to stay there and give darshan. So, rich families, they have very many children, many very big, because that's part of the understanding. If you're part of the opulence of being rich is that you have a big family, you're able to maintain all your relatives. So, where Prabhupada was staying, this mansion, big family, so many relatives. So the man brought in his family to introduce the whole clan, the whole dynasty to Prabhupada. This is my aunt, this is my cousin, this is my niece, this is my nephew, this is my grandmother, this is on and on he went. And finally Prabhupada just turned to one of his disciples and said, what he's saying is, this is my sex life. This is the standard of vision of one who can actually see, one who actually can understand what is going on in life. And Prabhupada is teaching us that standard. How not to be fooled by all the packaging. So, especially for our devotees who are coming from Malaysia. What I've been explaining, this is what's going on in this country. Amongst the Westerners and the Indians, those of Indian descent, they're being greatly affected. How can they not be? They turn on the television, you have no idea what they will see on that television. You could not believe. I will not explain. What is available for any child to see? Just turn on the TV. Just the most abominable things are just discussed and demonstrated right on television. And this is supposed to be civilization. How can anybody hope to raise a child in any conception of purity these days? Whether you're Western or from Indian descent, the same Maya is available and it's swallowing everybody up. Their only hope is to take shelter of the society of devotees. And even then, of course, it is a struggle. But at least you know if you push ahead according to the instructions of the Acharyas, you'll come out successful. But there's no hope in struggling in the world. There's no hope at all. So these things are happening, and we should have a firm understanding of what the situation is today. Everybody's being gobbled up by a civilization dedicated to lust. Whether they're New Zealanders or they're from India or whatever, everybody's being gobbled up by the same thing. It's an extraordinary problem. No one understands the need for renunciation or control of sex desire. Now what is happening? Comes to grab the baby, but she flies into the air upward. She's Yoga Maya. There are two departments for managing this world, the spiritual affairs and the material affairs. Yoga Maya handles the spiritual affairs, and Mahamaya is a partial expansion of Yoga Maya. In other words, Mahamaya, the material bewildering energy, is a subordinate department of Yoga Maya, the bewildering spiritual energy. To be a living entity, part and parcel of Krishna, means you must be bewildered one way or the other. You can simply choose your bewilderment. Will you be bewildered by Yogamaya, or will you be bewildered by Mahamaya? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, I am in everyone's heart. From me is coming the knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. If Krishna doesn't want you to see him, you cannot see him. And if Krishna wants you to understand him, you will understand him. When Krishna doesn't want you to see him because of your material disqualifications, because of your maya, Krishna uses mahamaya. Yogamaya has nothing to do with materialism. In the case of Kamsa, Shalva, Duryodhana, all these persons in the Bhagavatam and Krishna book who had some dealings with Krishna, yet could not understand Krishna, they were not covered by Yogamaya. They were covered by Mahamaya. When Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and company, and they all saw the universal form, and they saw so many things, they saw Garuda even, they could not understand this is the Supreme Personality Godhead. That is due to the influence of Mahamaya, the illusory energy. Shalva, all these characters. It's not that Yogamaya was covering them over so that they would participate very nicely in Krishna's pastime. No, this was the illusory energy of Maya, Mahamaya. For the devotees, however, that is Yogamaya. When Mother Yasoda is treating Krishna like her son, that's her son. It's not like her son. Krishna is my son. If I don't take care of him, what will happen to him? Sometimes Nanda Maharaj would come home and he would say to Mother Yasoda, can your son do any work? Can he do anything? And Mother Yasoda would say, yes, yes. Ask him to do something. And Nanda Maharaj would say, Krishna, bring my wooden shoes. And Krishna would bring his shoes. Sometimes the older gopis, the older cowherd ladies of Vrindavan, they would treat Krishna just like he was a puppet. They would say, Krishna, little baby Krishna. It's like we've just finished the Damodar month where we sing the Damodarastic prayers. So, there you see how Krishna becomes bound by a devotee's love. And the devotee doesn't think, Mother Yasoda is not thinking, I'm binding God with the rope. She thinks, I'm binding my son. When she stands before Krishna with a stick in her hand, with one hand she holds Krishna's hand, with the other hand she's got a stick threatening him. She's not thinking, I'm doing this to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She's thinking, this is my son, I must chastise him. He's all attractive, everyone knows he's the heart of our hearts, but he's my son, I must chastise him. So, sometimes the older gopis, they would say to Krishna, to baby Krishna, if you will sing and dance very nicely, we'll give you a sweet. And so Krishna, just like a puppet in their hands, would dance and sing, and they would laugh and clap. In this way, the Supreme Ishwar, Parameshwar, the cause of all causes, coming under the control of his devotees' love. Prabhupada explains that, I was just listening to one tape where Prabhupada was saying, Krishna gets disgusted sometimes, everybody worshipping him. He gets disgusted. He wants to come under the control of his devotees. He gets disgusted with so much worship. Therefore, Yogamaya covers not only the devotees, but also Krishna. Now you can say, well, how can the potency cover over the potent? How can Yogamaya cover Krishna? Because it's Krishna's desire. Yogamaya does all the necessary things to make the pastime very exciting for Krishna, because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So Yogamaya covers the devotee, so the devotee forgets Krishna's God, and like Mother Yasoda, treats Krishna as her son. She doesn't think anything else. And Krishna, he does not act like he's God. He just acts like the most inconceivably wonderful baby. All this is being managed by Yogamaya. With Krishna's permission, of course. So, these two departments are responsible for all the affairs that go on in the material and spiritual realm. Kamsa, he's not actually dealing with Yogamaya, he's dealing with Mahamaya. Prabhupada explains in his notes to the first chapter of the 10th canto that Yogamaya has nothing to do with demons and non-devotees. They cannot see her and they cannot touch her. So, Kamsa is dealing with Mahamaya, and you'll read later how respectful he becomes. Oh, it's the goddess Kali! Oh, now I understand the truth. In this way, showing how demons are very respectful to Durga, or the goddess Kali, but they have no he has no respect for Krishna. But it's called here the child of Yogamaya, Yogamaya Devi, because actually Mahamaya is simply a subdivision of Yogamaya. So in this way, we're getting a very nice transcendental experience. A lesson from Kamsa in intense selfishness, and a lesson from Yogamaya on how the demons and non-devotees are very attracted to the material energy, and how they cannot see the spiritual energy because of the covering of Mahamaya, and how the devotees, for Krishna's pleasure, they will forget that they will not be aware that Krishna is God just to add pleasure to the pastimes. And even Krishna will forget that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to make the pastime enjoyable for himself. In this way, you can understand how Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So, any questions? Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the younger sister of Krishna. Of course, that's the basic, you know, answer. Then you can really get into, you know, so many details, which, you know, I just prefer myself to give the basic answers. But yet that is Krishna's younger sister. But then, of course, there's a question of, you know, Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan, and on it goes. So you know these things. You'd like to say more? I was hoping somebody wouldn't catch that. Yeah, Prabhupada's slipping in here. He just puts in real quick the word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yashoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? What you see is what you get there, I mean. Prabhupada's just letting us know that we should not think we've got Krishna's pastimes ever all understood. It's just so many inconceivable things going on. That's all he says. He doesn't explain it any more than that. I thought it slipped by everybody, you know? Oh, Maji, you're ready for that one too, huh? Any other questions? Yes.
I'm talking about the fertilization, the moon and full steam, the wrong direction. And considering that this time is about the percent of the population, it seems like if there's going to be a golden age of 10,000 years,
the radical thing that should happen, that is under our control, is that we should all become serious about chanting Hare Krishna. That is the most important part of the day, the morning japa time. If anyone wants to be an empowered preacher or book distributor, Prabhupada has explained that you just chant your 16 rounds from beginning to end without, you know, talking or interrupting. That was his answer. And the sutta asked him, how do you become an empowered book distributor or preacher? You just chant your 16 rounds and concentrate from the first to the 16th. So that is the radical thing that we can concentrate on. We're not simply just going to wait around for catastrophes. Prabhupada would also answer like that. Catastrophes may come, they may not come. We're just doing what we have to do to please Krishna. And then he would add after that, but catastrophes will come, because there's no way a civilization can continue like this. And when the whole population is absorbed in sinful activity, the whole population will be absorbed in calamity. Just like I will tell you one thing, I don't know if I've said it before here, but people are thinking that wars are becoming so orderly these days, and how although the world hasn't stopped war, at least it's going on in a contained way. This is just the Maya view. What are the actual statistics? World War I, 15% of the casualties were civilians. You know, the Vedic standard is when there's war, the Kshatriyas go off to some isolated place like Kurukshetra, and they fight, and whoever comes home, that's the new government. So the Vedic standard is civilians are never involved, just at the battle of Kurukshetra, simply warriors. Now, the Maya standard, the Asia Kali standard, is that civilians are affected by war. So in World War I, which was supposed to be the war to end all wars, 15% of the casualties were civilians. Okay. Then World War II, 50% of the casualties were civilians. Then you go to the Vietnam War, 90% of the casualties were civilians. Then you go to Bosnia and Rwanda, almost 100% of the casualties are civilians. So in this way you can see what's actually going on. And all the great weapons that are being developed today are for civilians. Chemical warfare, nuclear bombs, these are all meant for the civilians. And these are the reactions coming down upon the mass of society, not just the soldiers. So this is what's going on, but people don't think like that. They think, oh, it's only in Bosnia or Rwanda where people are being slaughtered. But here we are, especially in New Zealand, we're safe. Everything is nice and orderly. They're killing so many cows, but it'll be all right. No, you must get your reactions from nature. Yes? Yes, you are right. I said that the only hope for society is to take shelter of the society of devotees. Only hope for materialistic society. So he's rightfully pointing out that, well, if we look in our Krishna conscious society, we see high divorce rate problems. That is a fact. This is not something we are proud of. And for example, they were telling me in Australia, and I'm sure it probably is true in most places of the world. In Australia, amongst the devotees, they have a divorce rate as much as or more than the karmi rate. This is atrocious. But we shouldn't think, oh, just see, all this Krishna consciousness is just it's just sweet-sounding theory. It's not actually happening. And just try to understand the kind of people who Prabhupada is trying to save. Prabhupada and his representatives are trying to save. The disciple succession is taking animals and trying to make them into human beings. You see, Prabhupada pointed out that the four regular principles actually make you a human being. They don't make you like a transcendentalist. They make you human. So what we think is so... not you, you're from very distinguished background, but for those of us who are from very fallen backgrounds, we think the regular principles is really way up there. It's really... it's almost bicosa. Well, actually, it just makes you a human being. That's all. So try to understand what Prabhupada did. He's taking two-legged animals and bringing them to the standard of Vaishnavas through the holy name, the Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So, yes, there are problems, and these problems have to be worked out. But the point is, because we're struggling with these problems in the society of devotees, there will be great hope. There is great hope. But struggle in the material world, there is no hope. But yes, these are things we have to work on. You can look at it in two ways. You can look at it that, well, we have to teach more people, we have to teach our devotees how to honor marriage properly. Or you could also say, we have to teach our devotees that even if you're feeling some agitation, better try to remain single, because the statistics show that, you can take it, depending on your point of view, you can take it both ways or one way. I won't say which one I like the best. I like both ways, actually. The householders have to be taught what is the purpose of marriage. So what does a Westerner think the purpose of marriage is? Everybody knows, don't say it. Everybody knows. It's even theoretically, they may disagree. Oh no, it's not the purpose. But it's so packed into their body and their mind by the modes of nature. They think, no more am I running around having illicit sex with so many people. Now I'm married. What more can you expect of me? Therefore the purpose of marriage is? And then when that satisfaction is not working out, divorce. So, yes, it is a great problem for our society, this divorce rate. So those who are brahmacharis, you should use your intelligence. that, okay, I may be feeling some agitation, and sometimes I look at those who are married and I think, oh, how nice it would be to have someone cook prasad for me and wash my clothes. And of course, you talk to the household, as you'll find out, it's not exactly like that. The bill always comes in the mail. You don't get something for nothing in this world, you know? So, you may be feeling some agitation, or it's just, you know, I just something I have to go through. But if you use your intelligence, look at the statistics, you see that I should try to avoid it. That was Prabhupada's point. There's no doubt that Prabhupada tried marrying many people in the beginning of the Krishna conscious movement. Then he became very disgusted. I was just listening to one initiation lecture he was giving in Hawaii in the early 70s. It wasn't a marriage, it was an initiation. And right in the middle of the ceremony, Prabhupada just started roaring. If you Western boys and girls, you keep treating marriage in the way you do, I cannot give you any protection. I cannot take you back to Godhead. Okay, you need one wife, you need one husband. Marry, one wife, one husband. Not that changing all the time, this one, that one. I cannot give you protection if you go on like this. Just right in the middle of the initiation, he just started talking like this. And then he, around that time, he came up with his famous expression, man is good, woman is good, man and woman together bad. So, at the same time, of course, we must understand, some people will come to the Krishna conscious movement already married, and some will try to get married, even knowing, you know, all the dangers involved. So we have to also give training. What is the purpose of real household life? So it is an immense job. You see, we're not only teaching people to chant Hare Krishna, we're teaching them the basics of human civilization. I know, even in Malaysia, these things are coming in very heavy. This degradation is coming in very heavy. India, coming in very heavy. I was just reading that by the end of this decade, that means only 5 more years, India will be the number one country in the world for AIDS. That means 5 more years. So we have a lot of work to do. We actually, Prabhupada has given us a mission that leaves us no time for sleeping or anything. There's so much educational efforts we have to make. People have to learn how to engage in devotional service and then look at a higher taste than what they think is a high taste. So we have a lot of work to do. Any other questions? Yeah. What's that again? Gain? You have your independence, always, to use or misuse. That is part of your constitutional nature. How you're going to use your independence. You can't overlook that point. Anything else? All glories to Shiva Prabhupada.